right, good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, May 22nd, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday. We finally made it. Again, it was a long and grueling week, so I'm happy that we're here. It is 52 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York, and I see that we are under a frost advisory again, which is pretty unbelievable for almost June. Well, I have a treat for you guys today. Yesterday, Mr. Chuck Ochelli had Brandon Turbeville on as our number two guest talking about the Middle East, bin Laden, Syria, and all the crazy things going on there right now. And boy, aren't we lucky, because Brandon is off this morning and we are going to have part two of the conversation yesterday. Brandon, are you there?
Hey, Jules, I'm here.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay.
It's Friday. It's all that matters.
Best day of the week.
Yes, it is. So, great interview yesterday. I could have actually listened for another hour or two. I was really getting into the story and the connections you were making. And this morning you said that you had a couple more stories you put together, and there was all kinds of other stuff going on. So what's happening?
Yeah, we've got stuff going on all across the world, but the recent articles that I put up have to do with Macedonia. And I think you see a little bit of this in the media in terms of another people power revolution taking place. We see this all the time. We see protests in another country, and of course, We tend to side with the underdogs, or whatever side we're given to side with by the mainstream media. And of course, it's generally the people out protesting. And when you look at the ins and outs of what's happening in those countries, you tend to find out that a lot of times the people protesting are actually paid by the State Department or by color revolution networks that are trying to overthrow governments that are resisting U.S. or NATO imperialism. And that's what's happening in Macedonia. If you look at what's happening now, you've got protest in the streets of Skopje, which is the capital of Macedonia. And we've seen since the beginning of May, thereabouts, protests have been pretty large. We've got thousands to tens of thousands of people protesting. And the issues really should be a hint that this is a color revolution, because one of the things that have provoked the protest is this. It's a response to this spying and surveillance scandal that Macedonian officials the Macedonian government have allegedly been spying on other Macedonian officials and the opposition groups. Now, we can talk a little bit more about that. Now, I'm not saying that that doesn't take place, but there's questions about that. But this is the issue that they're out in the streets about there, and that they're spying on other government officials, they're spying on the opposition leaders, and they are the protesters and the opposition is claiming that the Macedonian government helped cover up the killing of a young man by police in 2011. And the protests are largely focused not just on those two issues, but on the issue of government corruption. And they've got tens of thousands of people out in the street. So when you look at protests that focus around something like government corruption, this is one of your first inklings that this is some type of color revolution, because it's like saying you're out marching against world hunger. Well, of course, we're all against world hunger, but what do you intend to do about it? There's no demands. There's no specifics. There's nothing. It's just government corruption. It's fit throwing. It's going out and getting your head bashed in by police for the benefit of somebody else. And I think that's what we're seeing here. So after the initial protest, we had May 5th. There were other protests against the government. Some of those protests remained peaceful. Some of them had turned violent. In fact, there's been more violence than not from these demonstrations. On the May 5th protest, there was violence between the police and the protesters, and there were injuries on both sides. I think about 40 people got injured. And as a result, several of the Macedonian government officials resigned from their posts, and that includes the interior minister. But the prime minister, Nikola Gruevski, he refused to resign, and he said that resigning is an act of cowardice. So he's not taking the Yanukovych path. But on May 17th, we had thousands of protesters again coming out onto the streets in Skopje. They demanded that the current government step down. The day after that, thousands more protesters took out to the streets in support of the government and in support of the prime minister. So I should also mention that there is a camp that's been set up outside of the government offices there in Skopje, and it's there indefinitely. They've got hundreds of inhabitants. This reminds us of what happened in Egypt, right, where they had these tents set up outside the government offices. And this is what they're doing in Macedonia. So these anti-Macedonian government protesters have this camp set outside the government offices, and that's where they're pitching their tent. They're occupying it, I guess we could say.
Well, I was just going to say, didn't they do that during Occupy in
Yeah, they
California
did,
too?
which was Soros funded, by the way. And
Exactly.
so speaking of Soros, this is what we want to get into because Soros is involved here. And we've got George Soros, we've got NATO. This Western color revolution apparatus is what is behind this. And again, most people, especially listeners to this show, are going to know the influence that George Soros has had. But just as a quick recap, we know that Soros was involved in the bulldozer revolution in Serbia that threw out Slobodan Milosevic back in 2000. He was involved in the Rose Revolution of 2003 in Georgia, and he was also involved in Turkey in 2006, when they had these massive protests that pushed Turkey toward this more coalition structure of government, which actually pushed more Islamist factions into the government. And of course, as we just said, he was involved in the Occupy movement, which, what did that accomplish? I mean, you look at all these movements and you see what did they accomplish? And well, they brought greater austerity, they brought greater impoverishment, they bigger police states. It was always worse after the movement than it was to begin with. And the only one that didn't do that was the Occupy movement. But when you look at what that accomplished, it was an incredible waste of time. They went out, they protested, they threw a fit, they camped out in the park, they smoked some pot, they got beat up by police, and that was the end of it. And then they went home. And big waste of time there. So we also know that Soros, I've done articles on this as well, that Soros has been involved in these race-related protests, from Trayvon Martin to the Ferguson issue, the Freddie Gray protest in Baltimore. We found that George Soros foundations were heavily involved in these protests. And it wasn't the issue necessarily. I'm not, the issue, you can argue one way or the other, but Soros was out there. His organizations were out there intentionally stirring up racial division and violence within these organizations. So Soros is well skilled at this type of color revolution and protest wrecking methodology. Now, in the U.S., Soros generally worked with the left organizations in Macedonia. It's the same thing. There's a little bit of difference, but the Soros funded foundations generally have this left cover, and that's generally the way they do across the world. They're seen as working in tandem with the left. Now, his most well-known NGO is the Open Society Institute, and that is highly active in Macedonia. It works with a number of different civil society organizations, is what they're going to call them, but what that really is just subsidiaries of the Open Society Institute. They're little foundations, they're little NGOs, they're little groups, community groups, and that sort of thing. And they kind of function as tentacles of the Open Society Institute. So this is what a lot of people in Macedonia, they know a little more about George Soros than we do here, as most people in foreign countries do know more about just about anything than we know here. They say, what they'll tell you is they say Soros came into Macedonia like a Trojan horse, and now he's an octopus. And that's the little saying that they've got there. So the Open Society Institute has been active in Macedonia for quite a long time. In fact, the guy who headed the organization for about 20 years was Vladimir Milson. Milson was a former police informant back in the days of Soviet communism. Milson was a guy who had ratted out this famous dissident actor whose name was Rito Siskov. This is so back a while back, but this he was a snitch and he was an informant for the Soviet police. So in Macedonia, when you look at how Soros functions, I say, here he has left cover. There's the left, the right, and Soros is heavily involved in the left. In Macedonia, it's almost as if Soros is the left, but because he has so much influence there in terms of the media organizations. For instance, the organization like Telma is a news outlet. There's 24 Vesti, that's another news outlet. They're both major players. They're controlled by Soros. They're major players in promoting the protests and promoting anti-Macedonian government messages. So again, they're both heavily funded by George Soros. The opposition leader that I was talking about earlier, Zoran Zaev, he is also funded by George Soros. He's got connections to the CIA. His entire party, the Social Democratic Union of Macedonia, the SDSM party, this former communist party, has been taken over by the Soros machine. And these guys, Zaev and Radmila Zakharinska, this is the another person who's involved with the SDSM. They're widely known to be fronts for the former prime minister and the former president. That's Branko Krevkovsky, right? This guy is, also connected to Soros, to the CIA, to a number of different NGOs, the National Democratic Institute, the National Endowment for Democracy, Freedom House, Open Society Institute, all this stuff. And they're working again to overthrow Krevsky. So it's pretty well known. We also had Victoria Nuland. She was involved early on. Again, this is the woman who was involved in seeing Yanukovych kicked out of Ukraine, and she actually went in. There's a international disagreement between Greece and Macedonia over a name. It's to be honest, it's incredibly stupid. And they, this is this gives you an example of the kind of things that people are drawn into disagreements about, the average people at the bottom, because it's the name of the country. Macedonia wants to be called Macedonia. Greece says no, they're the former Republic of Yugoslavia, known as Macedonia, something like that. It's ridiculous. But the Victoria Nuland comes in and says she wants to negotiate the disagreement between the Greeks and the Macedonians. And what happens is that they find out that she is working with Zaev, the SDSM, and a number of these different color revolution organizations to enable a coup in the Macedonian government.
Now, Brandon, wasn't Victoria Nuland the same woman that they released that audio from back in the Ukraine? Wasn't she the woman that they caught her on audio saying that they were going to go in there? Do you remember that? Her phone call?
Yeah, that's the
And they
same one.
released it. Yeah, that's what I thought. And so that was all planned to begin with too. So she's well known to be an instigator.
Yeah, this is the State Department. So it's coming. She is the Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. Very successful at that. But they found all kinds of evidence, right? They had CDs, DVDs, hard drives, all kinds of stuff. Savings deposit books. They found pretty clear information that she was involved in this coup. In fact, they actually charged her with conspiring for a coup. The intelligence agencies for Macedonian government had charged her in that. So that didn't go anywhere, but she got charged nonetheless. The Macedonian press and the Russian press are now mentioning that George Soros has brought in the Canvas Network, and Canvas is the acronym for Center for Applied Nonviolent Action and Strategies, and this is what they're bringing in. It's another CIA front. It's another NGO front from Soros. Basically, it's what some people call it a CIA coup college, right? They basically They come in and they work with partners like the Albert Einstein Institute, Freedom House, the International Republican Institute. They've had a number of these groups that come in, and they train these protesters. They train groups who train protesters. They're sort of the umbrella training organization. They were heavily involved in this April 6th youth movement in Egypt that the U.S. State Department helped fund and organize. They helped train the protesters in that in 2008, 2009, back in New York City, actually. And they help they train them in basically the nonviolent applied action and strategies. It has to do with how they go out into the streets and how they are able to disseminate propaganda about their movement and that sort of thing. And these other groups can work with intelligence and fund them and that sort of. It's sort of the methodology. So now we've got Canvas in Macedonia, and these Canvas groups, they've sent out a memo to Macedonian students. They did this about 3 weeks before the protesters started in the middle of the streets, that they would give an award to people with the best protest ideas of $1,500, which is big money there. And so essentially, they're promoting the protest. They're helping train protesters, and they're actually giving awards to protesters there as well. So this is, we won't go into too much about the Canvas thing, but essentially, they were involved with Otpor. Remember, in Serbia, Canvas had trained the Otpor protesters. That was financed by Freedom House and the CIA. Then the whole name. Is it was a branding initiative to give them a slogan. They had their symbol, and all of this was created in the halls of the State Department. Now, just a question of this wiretapping issue that I mentioned earlier, what the protesters are out on the streets doing, what they're protesting against, this idea that the Macedonian government was spying on the opposition candidates and the opposition protesters and that sort of thing, or opposition party, I guess we should say. We've got mainstream outlets here in the U.S. reporting it as if it was fact, right? That Macedonia definitely did this, and this is what brought people out into the streets to do it. They say they wiretapped 20,000 people. And when you look at the situation, there's a little more complicated than that. There's taping of phone calls and that sort of thing, true, but the individual who originally reported on this is claiming that the Western press took his report and amended it, and that they're presenting this as something that it was not, that it was actually the opposition groups that were wiretapping the Macedonian government in an effort to blackmail them. And they apparently went through and wiretapped the Macedonian government officials and amended and edited the tapes in some ways, and were saying, we want a power sharing agreement or else we'll release this information. And it didn't work to the levels that they thought it was going to work. Now, am I rambling here? Should I?
Not at all. If you have 1 second, there was a question that came up in chat for you
Okay.
in regards to Deborah Keegan. Do you know Deborah Keegan? Kagan?
Is this the wife of Robert Kagan, I think?
I'm not sure. It says, are you aware if Deborah Keegan is still involved in foreign policy, either with the think tank NGOs or actual service? When I looked her up, she
I
was an
think so.
American. Yeah, an American stateswoman and former U.S. foreign policy liaison, and was a public, some sort of advisor to Bush.
Yeah, as far as I know, she is still involved. It's not, maybe not in an actual state, capacity. But these people go in and out, right? They go in the state, then they come back out, and they work in a think tank, and then they go back in with another administration. So, I would say that she is still involved.
Yeah. Okay. And no, you're not rambling. I'm just listening really hard. It's a lot of
Okay.
information. That's why this is called Before the First Cup.
right,
Get
so we
everybody.
have the one. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, get everybody's brain working first thing in the morning.
Okay. All right. So I think one of the things we've got to pay attention to are the methods that's used in the color revolution apparatus in Macedonia, because they always use these ethnic divisions, these racial divisions, religious divisions. Again, more silly things for people to divide themselves over and fight over. But we have Macedonia bordering on Greece. And again, there's this ridiculous argument over a name. There's a controversy with Greece, therefore. And then we also have the border with Kosovo, a border with Serbia, and a border with Albania. And we have this question of ethnic Albanians. And there's been a movement from these Albanians, and they kind of flirt with separation from Macedonia. Again, they're bordering Albania, so they're always able to be tempted to look at creating this greater Albania. The same way that the Kurds in Iraq or Iran and Syria and Turkey kind of occasionally rear their heads and look at, this idea of a Kurdistan. So it's kind of the same thing. The Albanians are a minority in Macedonia, but they're about 25% of the population. So it's a minority, but it's a fairly large minority. It's definitely large enough to cause a stir whenever they get agitated. And of course, we have the Soros network that comes in and takes immediate advantage of this. This is, with the networks that Soros has inside of Macedonia, with the control that he has over the Macedonian media, it makes it that much more potent when you realize that there's only 2 million people in Macedonia. That's the entire population of the country. So with such a wide network of color revolution apparatus media outlets in Macedonia, the fact that the population is so small kind of multiplies his ability to get that message out to more people. So we've also got a number of other things happening. We had the opposition parties. They were already boycotting the parliament. That kind of creates tension in a situation that's open for color revolutions. Of course, it was done, it was all planned. So the fact that the opposition party would have been boycotting the parliament, that's something that we have to look at and wonder, is this a Newland idea? Where did this come from? So the reasons for the color revolution in Macedonia and the reasons why this is important, there are a number of reasons. Of course, the idea of Russian influence is one of them. The idea of greater influence from the NATO powers over the Eastern European countries, that's of course a big part of it. But the biggest issue is this Balkan Stream pipeline. The Balkan Stream is rather new. It's a restart of the South Stream, which, if you remember, the South Stream pipeline would have went from Russia through the Black Sea into Bulgaria, and from there it would have gone on to Serbia, Hungary, Slovenia, and Austria. And from there, that gas would have been delivered to Europe. It would have been Russian gas in Europe. But this was going to be one way to bypass Ukraine. It was also going to be a way for the Russians to provide more oil and gas to Europe, so the Russians can keep Europe over a barrel. Presumably, if the Russians are providing this much oil and gas to Europe, then their international behavior is going to be somewhat more reasonable. Already, Russia provides Europe with about 30% of its energy. It's about a third, and obviously there's profits and services to both countries, but if the EU is dependent on this oil and gas from Russia, then you have this constant ability, this leverage that Russia has with the EU. But the South Stream never happened because the United States came in, threw a fit, and the EU bullied Bulgaria to back out of the South Stream pipeline. This is illogical because they need the oil and gas. But the Balkan Stream, the Russians, the Bulgarians were backing out. The Russians said, "Okay, forget it. The Bulgarians don't want to play ball. The Macedonians might play ball." And the Macedonians have played ball. So now we've got the Balkan Stream, which is going to go through Turkey into Greece, and then through Macedonia, and then into Serbia and Hungary and Austria. So it's going to be a replacement for the South Stream. So, we know that the United States and NATO, they've been trying to remove any leverage that the Russians would have over Europe. They've sabotaged oil pipelines in the Middle East that would have benefited Iran in favor of, providing oil and gas to Europe. So they've destroyed the pipeline that had been built from Iran, Iraq, and Syria into on up through into Europe. They've destroyed that in favor of this Saudi Arabian pipeline, Qatari pipeline that they're trying to put in now as soon as they can get rid of Assad. And that's really one of the major reasons for this. And of course, the idea also is if you can exploit these ethnic tendencies in places like Macedonia and Albania, you can do one of two things. You can either break the country up, you can create your greater Albania, and you can have what Brzezinski termed the micro state and the mini state, and you have these little impotent tiny states that can't resist a bank or a corporation or a Western government or NATO. Or you can keep them as the countries that they are and constantly use these little groups as battering rams, right? Whenever the government doesn't want to do what you want it to do, well, we'll stir up the Albanians and we'll send them out. And if the Albanians don't want to play ball, then we'll get some Macedonians that come in and don't give them equal rights or something. This is you can always use the these little ethnic groups that identify with themselves as ethnic groups against other people who identify themselves as ethnic groups. You can always get half the poor to kill the other half, in other words. So, just like the protest that took place in Syria and Libya and Ukraine, the Western media is reporting this as a people power revolution, the people fighting for freedom, as always, but they're not showing you the fact that there's tens of thousands of people out there in support of their government. Doesn't mean that they like their government. It does not mean that they are Grevsky groupies. They don't, they're not out fighting and saying that our government's perfect and we love the way things are. We love the status quo because it's not great there. And Grevsky is corrupt. I mean, name me one government that isn't corrupt. And they're not out supporting the status quo, but they're out opposing foreign intervention in domestic affairs. They're opposing color revolutions, and they're opposing the collapse of some stability in their society. So, something to bear in mind. Of course, this is probably not going to be the only one. There was an attempted color revolution in Hungary as well. There was some destabilization there about a few months ago. So, this all this stuff seems to be intensifying.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you also, so you were talking about Russia. Did you happen to see the news yesterday about Moscow being ready to supply weapons to ISIS?
Oh my God, no.
Yeah,
I
that's what I
haven't seen
said.
that.
Oh my God, no. I mean, how long is it going to be before we now have a proxy war between different ISIS factions on the ground? I mean, this is crazy.
Well, I don't believe that for a second. I mean, it's this goes into the realm of the we finally reached a point where propaganda in the United States makes absolutely no sense because remember we killed Osama bin Laden and now we've looked through his reading list and we found out that his bookshelf looks a lot like mine. Big
Right.
surprise.
Ah, that was
And
hysterical.
yeah, I mean, Bin Laden's a 9/11 truther now, right? No,
Right.
and no one in America will actually look at this situation and say, well, wait a minute, if Bin Laden did 9/11, why would he be reading and giving credibility to books that say he didn't?
Right.
This is it's very simple, but what's going to happen is that the average person is going to look at this and say, ah, Bin Laden, he was a 9/11 truther. This guy's a 9/11 truther, so he must be a terrorist. He must support Bin Laden.
Exactly. And you know, it's so sad that the minds of the general populace are so simplistic now that they would make that connect the dot connection. I mean, I was watching a mainstream clip yesterday, and they literally said, and I quote, that he had truther books on his bookcase, like to completely demonize anyone questioning the official narrative as being, you know, a terrorist in the Middle East. But nowhere in that clip did they even mention that bin Laden was a CIA asset or anything of that nature. And we know that to be a fact because Hillary Clinton was in front of a subcommittee hearing back quite a number of years ago talking about how we set up bin Laden, right? I mean, yeah, that's well, not actually, conspiracy at all.
Zbigniew Brzezinski admitted that we created al-Qaeda back in the 1970s to draw the Russians in, and that's on record. You can even see him on video talking with these guys and telling them that their war is a holy war and all that kind of stuff. So it's on record. I would say, as I said last night on Chuck O'Shelley's show, that I really wish that bin Laden had bought my book because I could use the extra free press. You know, so if there's anybody else out there about to be assassinated by the CIA, you know, BrandonTurberville.com, click on the books tab.
But, right. You know,
this is ridiculous, but the idea that is going to fund ISIS. Well, this is a Western creation. So I don't know why Russia would fund ISIS, because the United States is doing pretty damn good a job of that. And the Russians have been supporting Assad. And of course, Assad is opposed to ISIS. You know, he's one of the few, you know, Assad, you know, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Hezbollah, these are the people who are opposed to ISIS. And, yeah, but you know what you'll eventually see is that the media, if this propaganda line continues, is that you'll see Russia painted as the patrons of ISIS. I mean, the propaganda narrative has even been at one point that Assad was supporting ISIS. Yeah, I don't know if you saw that, but there's been propaganda narratives that say how Bashar al-Assad has supported ISIS. He supported, I think the narrative is somehow that he supported ISIS because because they're fighting the moderate rebels that the U.S. is supporting. Well, you know, not to dwell too long on stupidity like this, but it's not true, because there aren't any moderate rebels to fight, and because the moderate rebels are ISIS. They're the same thing. You know, it's absolutely insane when you know what's going on, when you can look at it and see that these narratives are so outlandish and so stupid that, you know, it's surprising how anybody can follow along with it. But if you're staring at a television screen day in and day out, it makes sense, because you've been led there step by step. So I guess we shouldn't make fun of people who believe it to be, you know, too much, but you know, it's absolutely insane.
It is.
this propaganda narrative.
Hey, let me ask you,
what's next? They're gonna... Oh, go ahead.
No, let me ask you, too. Do you mind if I bring JJ in for part of the show here? He has some big questions he wants to ask you.
Okay.
All right. Hold on one second. Mr. JJ Inc. is going to join us here for a little bit. JJ's chomping at the bit to ask questions. Hopefully, Skype's acting a little funky, so I'm hoping that this all works. Are you there, JJ?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Awesome. Finally, everything's working.
So we have James Freeland and Mr. Brandon Turville on air.
Yeah, pleased to meet you, Brandon.
Hey, same here.
I kind of follow you and have for a while. You know what I find the most interesting here is how Ukraine is supposedly was this legitimate. It was a coup. It was a violent coup, and it was funded in part by the United States. But what's happening in Yemen is totally illegitimate. They had a one party, one man vote where, sure, you could go vote, but there was only one person running, and his mandate was up. And now the Houthis there are the enemy, and Saudi Arabia is just bombing the crap out of them. But that's legitimate.
Yeah, it really is a tale of two protests, isn't it? Because you've got, in one country, you can overthrow an elected leader, and that's fine. That's just freedom and democracy in action. But in another country, you know, a guy who was appointed by essentially the GCC oh, you can't overthrow him because he was a democratically elected leader, and you can't overthrow a democratically elected leader, and then that deserves bombing. Yeah, it's absolutely the same thing in Syria as well.
Same thing in Syria. Same thing in Crimea.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Before I want to ask you a question, but I want to just real quick. You'll recall several years ago, they were equating truthers to Ahmadinejad, and Ahmadinejad is a truther. Now Bin Laden's a truther. I mean, it's so stupid. I don't understand how people buy it. I mean, there's pictures of John McCain with all these people who are now, you know, in ISIS, and we had Biden, and we had all the rest of the neocons wanting to, you know, fund the rebels that shared our beliefs and our, you know, views. The whole thing is just laughable. But the truther thing, they've been trying to label us people with, you know, as truthers with all these, you know, axis of evil for quite a while. And the idea that Bin Laden, why would Bin Laden be a truther when he still has, you know, allegedly, you know, the greatest army in the world in a manhunt after him, but he's a truther.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was asking. If the guy did it, then why would he be reading books and giving it any credibility that say he didn't do it? You know, this that's beyond me. But, you know, the first very soon after 9/11, you knew this was coming, because when Bush gave the statement that would let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories before anybody really knew what those were. And then we had John Ashcroft saying that anybody who essentially questioned the official story of 9/11 or didn't support war efforts were aiding and abetting terrorism. You knew eventually that this was going to come, that if you questioned the official narrative, then you were supporting terrorists, or you had like minds with terrorists. So.
Yeah. And that's what it's coming to now. If you don't want to kill brown people, in the Middle East, you're ISIS. I mean, that's it here, even in America. I mean, now there's ISIS in New Jersey. There's ISIS in Texas.
Well, Brandon,
I'll find out tomorrow that my principal at my elementary school is ISIS, and Brandon, I might be ISIS, Brandon.
Brandon,
if he's
actually,
a 9/11 truther, he might be. So
Brandon actually said it last night about an ISIS under every bed. I mean, that's really what it's come to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've really, you know, ramped up the religious warfare narrative here in the U.S. As you were saying, you know, they've got people so radicalized here that it's becoming a religious war, because so many of these you look at so many, you know, Zionist Christians here in the U.S. who are willing to just go fight tooth and nail at any country, anytime, anywhere, for any reason, as long as it's killing Muslims. And you know, what is that? It's funny how
Brandon, I don't know how any person could say that Jesus Christ was their Lord and Savior and then be a Zionist to boot.
Well, they managed to do it.
Is a denial, is a complete and utter denial of the Christ. Well, Jesus was a man, regardless of what anyone thinks. In history, he existed. Now, you know, everything else, I suppose, to the atheist is debatable, but. And especially, you know, the scumbags like Hagee, who just, you know, want people to lay down their fortunes and their children's lives for Israel. It's a joke, and no real Christian should buy that crap.
Well, I'm sure, you know, he takes plenty of money, but when the war comes, he'll be here in the United States taking more money. He won't be fighting it, that's for sure.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah, so you know, all of this you can just see though how it's being ramped up for the next type of invasion. I said this last night, and I think people should pay attention to this. We've got this deal coming up with Iran that's supposed to be finalized in late June, and I you know, these things are hard to predict. I'm not making a prediction. I'm not planting my flag here. But what I'll say is that you've got a number of issues coalescing that's setting us up for a nuclear deal to fall through with Iran, right?
That deal's not going to happen, bro.
Yeah, the idea here is that these things are vague agreements. See, they still got to iron out the details.
TPP, and that will happen. Iran, no. That deal's not going to happen. In the end, they'll play it like it's about to happen right up to the end, but it won't.
Yeah, and what they'll do is the U.S. will insert some kind of ridiculous little detail that the Iranians just can't bring themselves to be able to accept. It'll be some kind of really offensive, overarching detail that they have to go in and they have to search and everybody has to be frisked or something ridiculous. And the Iranians will reject it. The media will present it as the U.S. did everything it could to get peace. The Iranians don't want peace. They want to nuke everybody.
Yeah.
And either we'll take military action or the Israelis will do it, and then we'll come in behind them. And, there's talks of a Turkish invasion of Syria either in the next few days or before the end of June or around the end of June, which, of course, is when the deal is supposed to be signed with Iran. And if it's signed, the sanctions go off. If the Turks invade Syria, the Iranians may find themselves in not just a proxy war, but in a situation where they can directly be fighting Turkish soldiers.
If that happens, they will have to call upon their protection agreements with other countries, other nations. And Turkey's been involved in Syria from the start. I know you've been researching, so you'll know. Turkey, ISIS, Mossad, CIA, they're all one. They're peers. They're not,
It's all one.
It's all one thing.
Yeah.
So if you've got two groups of people, whether, and you're right about the left in America equals cultural Marxism, equals socialism, Bolsheviks, Marxism. That's what George Soros represents here and around the world. And that's what happens with all these. You may have legitimate gripes and you get out there with some signs, but always beware of a sheep, or a wolf in sheep's clothing. And I'm saying the same thing about some of I say the same thing. It's why I don't make many friends in the local truth or movement, because I see the enemy. I see the wolves out there. And, if something were to happen, all right, now, do you think, first of all, you see all these things happening geopolitically around the world, right? And they're all, connected. They're all connected to Greater Israel. They're all connected to Western business and banking interests. But here in the United States, everyone's talking about, they have been, dude. If you listen to, any of the old Bill Coopers or even Mae Brussels, they've been talking about, martial law in the United States and the coming, apocalypse since internet radio, since shortwave radio. Probably, there was a guy next to Christ talking about it, and even Christ himself talked about it. So, but if it were to happen here, we have Jade Helm, which I believe is more Alex Jones blowhard bullshit. But there is a lot of troops, but just north of there, you have I'm saying if something's going to kick off here, it'll start financially. But we have we've got some groups running around here calling themselves friends that are really, really, really pushing the envelope. And you just have to beware of people who you think are your friends in this movement. Because you see the intrigue around the world and people don't think it happens here. They don't think that the people that just because they may have some kind of, even the most tacit of connections to a person, they would never believe that the same thing that happens every freaking where else, every country, every government, every population on the planet isn't happening right in their own. So I don't know if that was a question or if that was just me trying to get some airtime on you, Brandon. But is that the way you see it?
Yeah, even,
remotely?
Yeah, you've got, it's as above, so below. You've got a situation in which there's intrigue and there's all this playing of one side against another on the international level. But, of course, it's going to happen on the individual level. And any little group that you have, if it starts to represent some type of threat, you're going to have individuals who come in and try to turn you against the people in the group or against other groups. And, that's already happened in the alternative media, and I'm not going to say anything more about that. People could see that for themselves. But, absolutely. I just look at it as above, so below, and it's not something that really surprises me. And I think people really should start wising up, especially when you look at, these movements. Here in the U.S., I mentioned the Occupy movement. Legitimate gripes, not one single.
And I were there. We were there the day Brooklyn Bridge kicked off. And, I'll be honest with you. I was kind of fooled by at first. Then when we got home, I started looking into it. And, I started looking at Move On and Bill Ayers and George Soros. And so it stunk right from the start. But
because billionaires care so much for the average people at the bottom. That's how they became billionaires.
Yeah, exactly. Tea Party movement, all that. So you have to go back to this. I said on my show the other day, if you're going to join a group, you start your own group, me, myself, and I. And if you absolutely have to be in one, join Richie Cunningham's. Remember the fraternity he was in was Mama Papa Sister. So, you know, that's where you need to look first, not at some, cult leader in Austin, Texas for guidance, man. There's people that are right near you and right next to you that either need guidance or have guidance. So that's my advice to people. And anyone that says, hey, trust me, we're here to protect you and help you, I would immediately put my guard up.
Well, I think the biggest thing, though, is that people need to get a clear idea of themselves. They need to get a clear idea of what they stand for, what they're willing to do, what they believe in, and what they demand. Because if you do that, you can join a group. Because if the group wants to do something, they can't make you do something that is against your principles and what you stand for. But if you're a person who's willing to go along with something just because, oh, well, the group's doing this, I want to be part of the group, I want to be part of the movement, well, then you're just a number. Then you're a part of the group. You're just a part of the mass. But if you can be an individual, you can be part of a group successfully. But, you know, the first step is to understanding what you stand for and what you're willing to do and not do and what your demands are, because that way when the group starts stepping off the reservation, you have the ability to step back.
Well, now, I put it like this real quick, Jules, and I'll shut up. I have to put myself out on Front Street, you know what I'm saying, and be completely honest, because I do believe that with a quadrillion dollars in derivatives, the financial system is going to collapse. Now, whether it turns, a lot of people who are in this movement don't actually believe that. They don't even really understand what derivatives and that all that is, or what real intrigue and foreign policy really is, or the true evil that is here. They're just really trying to make some money. They're just trying to. So just put yourself, you don't need to join a group. You can go to the protests, you can go and be your own person, but be honest. Be freaking honest, because you're not going to change. Even if you can't change anything, you are in control of your own karma if you live a good life. I mean, essentially, and you're honest and you're not fake and you're not trying to mislead people purposely. All right. Jules had something to say. I mean, I just know that most of the hosts, most of the movement, most of the groups out there are insincere. At best.
Well, UCY has a good group of people, and it's because we started at grassroots.
That's
you know,
right.
This was a group of friends that, you know, we met through someone who was a friend. And my personal thing is just caution, absolute caution. Everybody you meet brand new, absolute caution, because you don't know anymore.
Well, we spend hours a day talking about it in other countries, how it's happening.
Right.
It's happening here, too, and it's happening in our groups.
I think so. Here, I wanted to ask you guys if you had seen either of these stories. There were two that definitely caught my attention besides Russia now giving weapons to ISIS in the near future. One was, did you see that we are now going to be resupplying Israel's bomb and missile arsenal?
Yeah, with bunker-busting missiles.
Yeah.
Why would they need that, huh?
And selling attack choppers to Saudi Arabia. And then we have the Saudi Arabian-Pakistan nuclear deal. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah,
that's been new to me.
That's been talked about for a couple of years, where Saudi Arabia has worked out a deal with Pakistan that they could essentially purchase nuclear weapons.
And what was so strange about that is Pakistan had some sort of like international, I don't know if it was a lawsuit, but they definitely were up in front of some international agency complaining that the United States was still dropping drone bombs on their people, and they were doing a cease and desist. And all of a sudden I saw, like, just fleetingly through my feed, something stating that Pakistan has now dropped the suit against the United States, and then lo and behold, 2 weeks later, Paki gets the green light to start selling nukes to Saudi Arabia.
Well, because we can just sell more nukes to India.
Well, that's true.
There's going to be international sanctions, right? And then we're going to have a nuclear deal with Saudi Arabia. Isn't this how this works? The UN will get involved and we'll all pressure.
Another legitimate democracy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty unreal. Yeah, and this chess game is just moving faster every Jules, day.
Jules, Brandon, every person you know, if the school was operated that way, even normal people would be like, what the, what? So it's brainwashing first of all, most people don't watch the news. And any news they do get, they're lucky if it flashed up as a meme on Facebook or they were reading the scrolling under the muted CNN while they were buying coffee at the convenience store.
Yeah, apparently the news from this week was that if you're a 9/11 truther, you're a terrorist and support bin Laden, and that the Russians are now ISIS.
Yeah, that's ludicrous.
ISIS.
Yeah. Russia going to support ISIS.
I have not heard that one.
I'll drop it to you in messaging. Yeah, you got to see this one. This was probably said 20 hours ago, so
well,
it was yesterday afternoon.
Putin's a truther, too.
He is, actually.
Yes, he absolutely is. Everybody but the United States are truthers, but our government.
Right. Well, they're calling us all out, and we're going, no, it's not happening.
And Israel's like, you guys are so stupid. It was obvious to an idiot that we were involved. You found vans with our spies. It was the biggest spy ring, foreign spy ring ever uncovered in the history of the United States was the Israelis spying on us. Our only friends in the Middle East. We didn't have enemies in the Middle East till we had Israel as our friend.
Yeah, that's true. Then we found the dancing Israelis.
Yeah,
on 9/11, which everybody for the first 3 or 4 days they claimed it was Muslims, know, and everybody was ready to lynch the guys. And then they found out it was the Israelis, and the answer was, oh yeah, well we let them go. It's no big deal.
Yeah, they're back. They're home. They weren't doing anything. There was no reason to hold them.
Remember, they also flew out Bin Laden's family.
Oh, yeah, that was the only flight allowed to leave the United States was to Saudi Arabia. That's not suspicious. Not a little bit.
No.
If you did that, look, there's a kid that got hit last week here in Syracuse. My girlfriend or my daughter's boyfriend's cousin got hit by a hit and run, right? It was this girl who was texting, who was drunk, and then she went somewhere after she hit this poor kid on a bike and put him in intensive care, a medically induced coma, and had two other people, her boyfriend and someone else, hide her car. Well, all three of them, I mean, if something as simple as that, it's obvious all three of them should be arrested and or whatever. But when, you know, one flight's allowed to leave, it's the Saudi Arabian flight. It's full of bin Ladens who had just been visiting with, of all people, George Bush Sr. in New York City.
Mr. Former CIA.
But, you know, but on a personal level, everybody can see the conspiracy. Oh, she hit a kid. Her boyfriend helped her hide the car. His sister lied to the police. All three of them are at least suspicious and should be picked up. But on a grand scale, when it happens in our own government, everybody looks at it and goes, whatever. What time is Dancing with the Stars on? Well, who's on this week?
That's it. I think this stuff is too difficult for people to follow.
It is, because most people don't have 5 to 6 to 8 hours a day to really, you have to read everything from everywhere to understand it.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, Sunni and Shia both start with us.
Yeah, you're right.
So, totally up to you guys. People in chat were asking if we could go another hour. I mean, that's up to you. If you guys feel like talking, I could arrange that.
I actually have to go, Jules.
I know. I do, too, actually.
I do, actually.
I'm breaking free for the weekend. So, but I could probably squeeze it in if there was a majority vote.
I would love to, Jules, but I can't. My dad's on his way over. I'm fixing his brakes.
All right,
but
cool.
This was great because you know, I was up early and I was raring to go and I didn't have to work today, but oh man, if I did another hour, but I will be live Sunday. I can tell you that.
Well, that's awesome. So JJ live Sunday at 2 PM Eastern.
Brandon, it's been a pleasure, man. I've been really wanting to talk to you for a while. You're a guy that does what I do. You probably spend even if you have a job, I go to work, but I still spend probably 6-8 hours a day reading. What's going on in the world?
It's quite the commitment. But I've enjoyed talking to you as well.
Thank you.
All right, you have a good weekend, JJ. So, Brandon, too, I want to make sure that you plug, you're doing an interview, a second interview, right, on Friday?
Yeah, well, yeah, next Friday I'll be doing an interview with Fox News, and it will be the Kate Daly Show, Fox News, out in, they're a Fox affiliate in Utah, and it'll be at, actually, Jules, I sent you the time, but I don't remember the time. I think
you said
3 Eastern
3 p.m.
time.
Eastern, yeah.
Yeah, so people could tune in there. If you're not in the area, you can certainly go online and listen to it online. And I'll be posting up the archive afterwards.
Yeah, if I'll have to see. I think I might have linked to it in the notes of the first interview you did with them, where their live stream was. But I'll make sure I post it in chat, and then we can rip that and throw that up to YouTube too.
Yeah, and then, as soon as I get the archive, I'll put that up at BrandonTurberville.com. So we're going to talk about the Middle East, probably talk about Yemen, Syria, a couple of other things, Iran maybe.
And their hosts were good, too. I was really impressed. They were very knowledgeable, asked very good questions.
Yeah, it's they were pretty good people. So looking forward to being back on there.
Well, that's cool. So we also have a new show starting tomorrow that you were absolutely the reason why it's going to be on here. Mr. Alan Watt is coming back to radio.
Yeah, that's everybody should tune into this. It's one of the few people that has so much information that, you know, it's like getting a college degree just by listening to his show. And that's going to be on what, 6 p.m.?
6 p.m. Eastern Saturday. We're going to start running them right after your Truth on the Tracks 5 o'clock marathon catch up.
Yeah, so it would be a great great two-hour block.
Absolutely. So that starts this Saturday. You're also working on some other new shows for us, which makes me really excited. All right, Brandon, in 15 seconds or less, what's your final thought for this Friday?
Well, final thought is that 9/11 truthers are not Bin Laden supporters, and that Russia's not giving weapons to ISIS, and that, you know, you should don't believe all the hype in the Western media. Just just go to BrandonTurberville.com and listen to UCY.
Awesome. All right, Brandon, you have an awesome Friday. I'm sure I'll catch up with you this weekend. You guys, make sure you stick around. There's all kinds of stuff on tonight. We have do we have a Truth on the Tracks? We do. Brandon plays Truth on the Tracks at 10 p.m. Eastern, so you can catch up on this week's show. We have Josh live at 6, Primer Time at 8, Truth on the Tracks at 9, United Front at 10, and Levon at 11.